Ingram Smith, Bud Elliott, as we continue our season position preview. Bud, why don't we go ahead and move the conversation over to the linebacking core? It has been a place where Florida State, it's safe to say Florida State's been kind of snake bit the past couple years. Still some reasons for some concern. Still some situations that did not play out in the way that they would have had to for Florida State to be fully comfortable with this position group. But I think tonight's conversation, the overarching question is kind of, is it safe to feel optimistic about the linebacking core as we move into fall camp?
Yeah, can we come out now? That's a good question. Now, I think first we have to address who Florida State lost real quickly here in our season preview episode for the linebackers. And that would be Reggie Northrup and Terrence Smith, who are both gone. They graduated. You know, Terrence Smith had a pretty fine Florida State career. I'll always remember him for stepping in when Florida State shifted the defense around in 2013 after the Boston College game, and they put Dan Hicks kind of buried down on the depth chart. And
I was wondering where you're going. Where
inserted
with
Dan Smith.
With where
yeah,
they put
I almost
him.
Said put him down, but that's certainly not the case. So I went with down on the depth chart. Yeah, inserted Terrence Smith. He played ably as a freshman, and in 2014 just constantly injured and hobbled, but yet had another good season when he was healthy. And I'll always remember him on that pick six, just limping down the sideline against Florida and somehow still managing to score as Jalen Ramsey just ear holes everybody on the Gators offense as they try to tackle Terrence Smith going down the sideline. And then, you know, when he was healthy last year, he was decent, but I mean, only 50 tackles on the season, only played in 9 games. Several of those 9 games, he was only in for a portion. And then Reggie Northrup, who always thought was a promising linebacker, had a, you know, another decent career, played in all 13 games last year, just not an impact guy ever after his ACL surgery. But Florida State fans should be very happy he came back. They certainly ended up needing him after Matthew Thomas was ineligible last year. So to answer your question, I think I'm the most optimistic I've been about these linebackers since the 2013 season. I think that this group has a real chance to be better than the 2014 and 2015 groups. Now, there's also a whole lot of variance built into this because of something that we'll discuss shortly, and that's youth. But I would like to start with the two guys who we expect to start and to play a whole heck of a lot if they stay healthy, and that's Roderick Hoskins and Matthew Thomas. Now, I only listed two names as starters, Ingram, for a reason. And I know you know this, but some of our newer listeners might not. When we talk linebackers, we are only talking like traditional linebackers who play on the inside spots in the 3-4 or the two starting spots in Florida State's 4-2-5 defense. So when we talk linebackers, we're not talking Jacob Pugh, we're not talking Josh Sweat or Brian Burns or whoever else Florida State feels fit to list at a linebacker spot on its depth chart or on its roster, because those guys are more truly defensive ends and will be discussed in the defensive end preview. So when we're talking linebackers, we're talking 7 guys. Roderick Hoskins, Matthew Thomas, Shamar Kilby-Lane, Delvin Purifoy, Josh Brown, Dontavius Jackson, and Emmett Rice. So that's 7 guys for 2 spots. It's a 3 deep plus 1. And the first guy on top there, Roderick Hoskins, I was very impressed with how he played last year, considering that he was making the switch from sort of that hybrid defensive end slash backer role to the inside, and spelled Terrence Smith, spelled Reggie Northrup at times, ended up with 42 tackles, 6.5 tackles for loss, which was by far the most of any of the linebackers. And I thought he was pretty damn good in zone coverage. He's a guy, 6'2", doesn't necessarily represent the length that he has. I thought his length and athleticism served him pretty well in zone coverage. He does look a little bit slimmed down this year, so perhaps he is looking to be a little bit better in man coverage. Teams did try to isolate playmakers on him at times last year and had some success with that, but he's certainly not a liability out there. I think he could be a fine college linebacker entering his junior season.
No, he's impressive with what he's able to do in zone. He's just he's lighter on his feet than I think you would probably think when first looking at him. And he just seems to have pretty good vision as far as what's in front of him. Much better playing with his head in the backfield, as are many defensive players, but not a liability by any means, and a guy that you have to think if he's able to stay healthy is maybe the most of a sure thing that you have in the whole unit.
And while he may be the most sure thing, I think the guy that has the absolute superstar potential still is Matthew Thomas. Signed in what, 2013 signing?
Believe so.
All right, so now he's a redshirt junior. Two shoulder surgeries, failed drug test, an NCAA drug test, which kept him out.
Which is a big one.
You can't be failing the bowl game drug test. That kept him out half a season. Academic ineligibility. Not sure how much he was going to play last year with the shoulder surgery anyway, although some people wonder if they didn't go ahead and clean that up knowing that he wasn't going to be eligible, and so they went ahead and did the shoulder fix there. Kind of hard to get a true answer on that. But Ingram, after all that, and certainly I think his mom passing may have had something to do with his academic ineligibility, was going through a really tough time in his life by all accounts, and your heart goes out to the kid. It's like, man, can he finally catch a break? And yet I look up and down this. I don't see any leg injuries. I don't see any reason why he shouldn't be just about as athletic as he was to make him the number one or the number two linebacker coming out of high school out of Booker T. Washington, dominating one of the best classifications in Florida, running up and down the field, making insane plays, showing crazy closing speed. And yet having elite-level length, too, at 6'3", 227. Man, he seemed refreshed. He seemed really energized and excited to be out there coaching the kids when the players are out there coaching at the Jimbo Fisher football camp. If he can play up to his potential, and that's asking a lot because that potential is really, really high, and who knows how much all that missed time has impacted his game, both physically and also in terms of understanding the defense and what they're asking him. But if he can come anywhere close to his potential, and I personally think if he does, this will be his last year in college because he's already, this will be his fourth season, and he's already struggled academically, and so you don't want to risk potentially being eligible for the 2017 season. But if he can play anywhere close to his potential, man, is that going to be a nice linebacking duo, because if Hoskins is your the lesser of your linebacker pair, and it's by a decent margin, which it would be if Thomas could reach his potential.
Real good shape.
That's, whew, man, yeah, you're in real nice shape there if that happens.
Interesting that you say that, and my biggest concern for Thomas is that I agree with you. There's nothing there that makes you think the physical skill set won't still be there. And all the talk from the offseason has been pretty positive from what you can get from people close to the program. Certainly from just photographs and things that you've seen of him, looks like a guy who's continued to have access to a college nutritional program. My biggest thing with Thomas is if he'll be able to mentally play at full speed. And, there's nothing that takes a 4.4 guy, let's say 4.6, since we're talking about a backer, nothing that takes a 4.6 guy to a 4.8 or a 4.9 more than him second-guessing his assignment or waiting another half second before he kind of pulls the pin as in run support or anything else that just makes a guy question himself and doesn't really let him play at full speed and be fully adjusted to the speed of the game. So there's not a whole lot he can do about that just with his history of certain steps that kept him off the field. But if he's there physically and if he can get up to speed with the flow of the game, then yeah, you've got potential at this position that is as positive as anything you've seen in 3 years.
Yeah, I really hope this kid stays healthy, and I totally agree with your point. That's why Hoskins is so important, because if Hoskins can be a heady player who can really play his assignment and can be the force player, then you can have time. And by force player, I mean the guy that maybe takes on a block, doesn't make the tackle, but
sets the edge.
Yeah, exactly. Sets the edge, forces the play back inside in some instances to where you're letting Thomas run free and clean up everything. I think that could be so big. Yeah, he can also be a really effective blitzer, I believe. And I'm just so excited to see him out there on the field. He is as talented, and this includes guys like Telvin Smith and Christian Jones and Nigel Bradham. He is as talented as any linebacker Florida State has signed since Jimbo Fisher got on campus. And I'm talking about even going back to Jimbo Fisher, offensive coordinator. So he's as talented as anybody they've signed at the linebacker position since 2007.
Big statement.
So far he hadn't put it together. I mean, 24 tackles in 2014, that's not much. But there's been a couple little flashes where you're like, oh, wow. That's probably enough Matthew Thomas talk. Let's get to their likely backups. And I'm going to say that is going to be Shamar Kilby-Lane and Josh Brown.
Josh Brown, a guy that is highly thought of internally, is maybe any of those group of early enrollees as far as how quickly he, well, it seemed as though he bought into the program and was really able to put himself in a place to absorb and take as much out of that early session as possible. And a guy that I know the coaching staff is particularly high on, and may take him a couple games. It may take him a season. Who knows? But somebody that they think is a pretty special piece. I'll be interested in your opinion as to how college ready you think he is.
Yeah, so Josh Brown out of North Carolina was primarily a defensive end in high school, and everybody thought he was going to play defensive end at Florida State, except for Florida State staff, who loved his athleticism, and I'll also say, except for me and you, because I told you about this, and I got to see him do some coverage and do some agility stuff at some events. Josh Brown does not have to play defensive end. He's 6'2", 217, really, really smart football player, hard worker, a guy who already has the mentality of an upperclassman, and they're not having to teach him maturity. They're not having to teach him work ethic. He's a really good student in the classroom. Got in, hit the ground running on day one in terms of lifting, learning the defense. You know, a lot of us were thinking if Matthew Thomas had some sort of other issue, that Josh Brown would end up being a starter as a true freshman on this defense. As it looks now, Thomas is going to be just fine. So Brown will probably just be a top backup. But a guy who we know can rush the passer, I think the ability to cover and play in space was a pleasant surprise for many and a big-time asset for Florida State. I'm excited to see Josh Brown. I really believe if Josh Brown stays healthy that he's going to be a multi-year starter for the Noles. I'd almost bet on him over almost anybody else in that 2016 recruiting class, which was the number two recruiting class in the country in terms of guys that I'm very sure will be multi-year starters. At the other spot, Shamar Kilby-Lane, a little bit bigger, a little bit thicker, maybe not quite as long of a player, 6'1", 225. Kilby-Lane, to me, is kind of a run-and-hit guy, could be more of a physical presence. I think can stand up the blocks a little bit better. I don't know if he has quite the burst that Josh Brown had, but then again, I've not really seen Kilby-Lane play all out since his junior year of high school. He played some last year. He was coming off a knee injury that he told me about during his senior year of high school. I believe that's now all healed up, and I'm very excited to see what he can do. But you know, there's some youth there in your reserve. Josh Brown's a true freshman. Kilby-Lane is a sophomore. But I think Kilby-Lane is being undersold by some in the media, not just who cover Florida State, but who would kind of take a casual glance and say, oh, they don't have any experience. That's true. I think Kilby-Lane would start for quite a few schools out there, though. A guy with that talent, that size, that pedigree, now in his second year in the defense, you got to like what you have there in him. And then behind them, there's three guys who are intriguing to me. First, Delvin Purifoy. I don't really know what you're ever going to get out of Delvin Purifoy, the former four-star. He's a redshirt sophomore. Florida State's listed him at 6'2", 246. He had the Jacoby McDaniel injury, which is like the break of the like lower leg bone slash ankle area. Jacoby described it to me one time, and it's really nasty. And suffice to say, a lot of kids never come back from that ankle. They're never the same. Purifoy has looked pretty significantly overweight at times. I think 246 is actually a sign of some progress there on the conditioning front. But you just never know if he's going to be able to regain that athleticism and that burst and that agility, or if the ankle will ever be the same. It's just a really tough injury. McDaniel was able to come back and actually play fairly well, but a lot of guys don't. So I'm not necessarily counting on Purifoy being able to give them anything this year. I guess we'll see. Are you counting on anything from him?
No, I mean, first thing, when you mentioned the two backups and you didn't list him, I was just remembered of his injury and how much that may really stunt his ability to be a meaningful contributor. And I think Josh Brown is a pretty special player in and of itself. But, I certainly classify this under the hope we're wrong, but I would be surprised if you got much out of Purifoy during his time here.
So then it's down to two guys who I don't think are really going to play a whole lot in the defense as true freshmen, but long-term I'm very high on. And that would be Dontavius Jackson, who out of Houston, 6'2", 243 pounds. I believe that's actually down a decent bit from where he was in high school. I spoke with him over summer. Florida State beat out Texas and a number of top schools for his signature. He's kind of that true thumper at middle linebacker that people want to use that stereotype, and I think it fits for him. Good to see that he's already making progress on the weight loss front, trimming down a little bit, becoming a little more lean, probably unlocking some quickness and athleticism and agility. Meanwhile, Emmett Rice out of Miami Norland, 6'3", already put on 10 pounds in the program, looks great. Mm-hmm. I think he's going to be a special teams demon this year.
Yeah, he's going to be fun to watch. He really is.
Yeah. If you want to watch a guy whose film will remind you a little bit.
Just a tad. Just a tad.
And I'm not saying he has the same burst or the same agility and closing speed that Telvin Smith had.
But it's there. I mean, I knew exactly who you were referring to.
Yeah, okay. I mean, that's why we're the number one podcast for Florida State, right? Because we complete each other's sentences. We've been doing this forever.
Every once in a while. Anybody you click on anything on the internet and I get to watch somebody that reminds me of Telvin Smith during his time here, it brings a smile to my face. So, yeah, I've watched a decent amount of Rice.
My only question with him was was he going to qualify academically? And he did. So that's a good thing. They obviously lost Keon Joyner, who did not qualify academically and is now headed to a junior college. But if you think about it, if Florida State played three linebackers, right, and they only had six guys who we believe are physically capable of playing the defense, that would be bad. That would be only a two deep with nobody else. Mm-hmm. But because Florida State only plays two linebackers, six guys is actually a three deep, and I think that's fine. Now, if both Hoskins and Thomas were to go down, they'd be in really bad shape. But that's pretty much the case of any team out there. Hey, if you lose your top two linebackers, if Florida were to lose Davis and what's his name over there, they'd be in trouble too. A lot of really great defenses would be in trouble if they lost their top two linebackers. I actually think Florida State could still be a very strong defense if it did lose one of these guys.
But let me ask you something that we hadn't necessarily talked about previously. But if at any point, do you think that Derwin James would be in the conversation as far as linebacker? Now, I'm not saying a permanent move or anything like that. You've just got such a special talent. And a guy who really almost fits some of what you'd ask for out of a 4-3 backer to a T. But you just talked about the style of defense that they run. But do you think that they do anything where James would potentially play in a place that we would look at and call a linebacking spot?
Yeah, maybe some in their dime package. But to me, Derwin James' value comes from his ability to play safety at 215 pounds, right? You know, there's a lot of guys like, hey, you're a really good player. But the truly special guys, you know, Reggie White could play defensive end at 300 pounds and not have mm-hmm. to slide inside. The best players at their positions are typically the ones, especially on defense, who can play down at a higher weight, right? Like right. play, you know, a guy 215 who can play in the safety, a corner who's, you know, 6'2", 205, and doesn't have to move to safety. A D-end, a guy with D-end size who can play linebacker, a tackle. Like what made Mario Edwards Jr. so special when he was healthy was that he had defensive tackle size, but yet he could play defensive end capably. But to your point, I do think in certain packages they could probably run him some there, especially with how many spread teams you're facing. There may be times where it makes more sense to run what is in essence seven defensive backs out there.
That is kind of a complete transformation from the Miami and Florida State, what they did on defense in kind of the late 80s, early 90s. Wouldn't you say, as far as where in the past you would move a guy because he could get away with his adequate size but would still have the speed? Like, you could take a strong safety, have him play linebacker, and he could still retain the speed of a strong safety. As far as how you looked at guys and how you grade them or value them at their particular position, where it seems now we much more look for guys who have a set base of physical, and certainly helps if they can run, but if they can carry that extra 15, 18, however many greater percentage than they would otherwise at that particular position group and still be effective, that it makes them all the more valuable.
100% agree. I think the main difference is that back in the day, everybody had size, but who had speed? Right. Nowadays, I think everybody has speed because of the spread. How many teams are able to combat the spread's ability to make you play in space with size, right? Because it used to be okay, outnumber everybody at the point of attack, try to get speed up there if you can. Florida State and Miami were able to do so. Nowadays, just by formation and alignment alone, you're being forced to play in space more than ever before. But do you have players who can play in space but also come down and take on blocks from offensive linemen and make plays? You know, can your safety take on a block from a flex tight end who happens to be 245? Well, Derwin James can. A lot of safeties probably can't. I think that's the separating factor nowadays.
One final thing, Bud, and I have asked this of you previously, but I'm going to do this one more time. When we look at the series of events that transpired at the linebacker position one more time, and all the transfers or all the injuries, guys that are booted, suspensions, transfers, etc. I went back and read EJ Levendary's bio one more time before we recorded tonight. I continue to be absolutely blown away by a kid who played in 13 games in the 2013 season, ranked ninth in the team in tackles, was then voted the most valuable player in the Garnet and Gold game for the defensive side, and then up and transferred.
Is idiot.
What the hell? What happened there? That does not make a lick of sense when I look at how much play, how much burn he got in the 2013 team, one of the more like transcendent defensive units that's been in college football over the past 10, 15 years. And it wasn't like a guy who, you know, got homesick, stopped playing. I don't, or maybe he did get homesick. I'm not sure what happened, but the effort was still there. He still went through spring and was, thought of very, very highly, and then up and transferred. And that is still an absolute mystery to me.
It's confounding because he would certainly be playing on this defense.
Undoubtedly.
Where's the kid now?
He may well be the captain of the senior, the final remaining link to that 2013 defense. But it's just bizarre. I think he originally transferred to UConn, and I don't remember it, but I know it's been a long, strange journey for Levendary.
Now, I do think that with the benefit of hindsight, we may be able to declare that he was overrated, but I still think he would have been playing on this defense. You know,
overrated. Call him overrated. He was still a guy who got an incredible. Now, granted, 2013 was a lot of blowouts, but that was a guy who had significant moments in that season and
absolutely
and contributed in a very legitimate way. And that will be something that I probably am randomly asking you about 10 years from now as well. But that's just something that when I was going back and looking at all the history of the linebacking core, whenever I see that name, I just have a hard time making sense of that.
So let's look here real quickly, and this is going a little bit longer. We are shortening these season preview podcasts just a bit this year, not because we don't like doing long ones, not because we know that y'all like listening to long ones. You love hearing us talk about Florida State. But one comment we did hear last year was that for people who join late, because of all the great social promotion y'all did, a lot of people maybe joined late and just became new listeners to the show, it was very difficult for them to listen to 10 hours of radio. Essentially, can you binge watch our season, or can you binge listen our season preview package? We want the answer to be yes, while still being comprehensive. So, real quickly here, Ingram, I'm going to run down the linebackers Florida State has signed since 2012. You ready?
Please.
Ukeme Alegwe, just too many drug tests. Jimbo Fisher
didn't have
an option. I mean, he had to kick him off the team. Reggie Northrup, when he was healthy, he was a good but not great player. Torn ACL made for kind of a disappointing 2015 final season. Matthew Thomas, we've already covered throughout this podcast. EJ Levenberry, you just covered. Roderick Hoskins has actually blossomed into a decent player for FSU. Let's go with the 2014 recruiting class here. Jacob Pugh, listed as a linebacker, kind of a hybrid linebacker slash defensive end. Kane Dobb, complete lack of self-control, both in...
Right, forgotten that name.
Going to class, substances, and food. Just, you know, blowing up, not... Just no self-control in any of those three aspects. Delvin Purifoy, devastating ankle slash leg injury we already covered. 2015's recruiting class, Shamar Kilby Lane seems to be on track. Lorenzo Phillips was a junior college player who the NCAA, there's some coaches on that staff who are still kind of angry at the NCAA about how they did this. They only gave the kid 1 year of eligibility, and they thought he would have two. They also had the Brian Bell situation in that 2015 recruiting class where they ended up not signing him.
Good, well done.
You know,
the only choice to make in that situation. But anyway,
with the PR stuff. You know, people were like, Florida State has done such a bad job recruiting linebackers. Not really. Everybody else in the nation was still chasing these kids too, and Florida State signed their fair share. They've just had poor luck, both with injuries and with guys smoking too much weed. And I don't think there's something where you can say if they had done a better job evaluating necessarily, because, look, guys get kicked out of programs for smoking weed and guys get hurt all over the country. It just happens that some of Florida State's bad luck has been disproportionately clustered at the linebacker position. This year, maybe things will start to change. I think there's reason for optimism.
I decided, and, you know, I talked to my family about everything.
Linebacker Matthew Thomas.
Matthew will start.
Yes. I like where he's playing right now.
To attend a Florida State University. Yeah.
Hey, do you believe in unicorns?
Believe.